Welcome to Talking. This is D.G. Martin talking to my favorite basketball coach, Lefty Driesell, who has recently been selected to join the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Coach, congratulations.
Thank you, D.G. Thank you very much. And you helped me get there.
Well, you had some really strong friends. Who was the person who pushed the hardest?
I don't know. A lot of people. Lon Babby, who was my lawyer at Maryland, and Mike Krzyzewski really helped. I think he helped. And
why would Krzyzewski?
I don't know. You know, all my players that win games for me.
Yeah.
that's what got me in there.
Well, it was a little bit late in coming. I loved. You know, you've always had the positive attitude about things, and the truth is that you should have been in the Hall of Fame about 30 years ago. And when somebody asked you to comment about that, you said, well, it's really great, because if I'd gotten in 10 years ago or 20 years ago, nobody would know who I was. But now I get this honor now when I'm, you know, when my main times have passed and people know who I am. How did you come up with that?
I don't know. It's true. I was just, you know, thinking about something to say, and I didn't want to say I was, you know, mad because I didn't get in or disappointed. And so I think it's true, really. I mean, I got people coming over now to see me and say, can I come see you, Coach? I just want to get a picture. In fact, I bought some furniture down here for my beach house the other day, and I needed two little mats to put on the front door. And he said, well, if I can get a picture with you, I'll give you the mats free.
No,
said,
you're
okay,
kidding.
That's a deal.
So you're
now, if I'd have gotten into Hall of Fame, you know, in 2002 when I retired, he wouldn't even know who I was. So it's worked out pretty good.
Coach, the other story that interested me is that you there's another person I want to say that you almost coached who's entering the Hall of Fame at the same time.
Charlie Scott, yeah. That's amazing. I didn't even know it. We were when at the Final Four, we had to go get measured for our ring that we're going to wear, and a coach that they're going to give us a Hall of Fame coach. And Charlie was in there. I didn't realize he was going to be there. And it was great. I spent a lot of time with him at the Final Four. He's a great guy.
Well, he is quoted as saying, if it weren't for Lefty Driesell, there wouldn't be a Charlie Scott. Now, Charlie Scott never played for you, so what's he talking about? What's that story?
Well, you see, I signed Charlie. I mean, I got a letter of intent that he signed. It didn't mean anything. It was a
but this was when
Davidson
you were at Davidson. At Davidson.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was the first one to offer him a scholarship because there were no African-American players in the ACC or the Southern Conference, or maybe in the Southern Conference at West Virginia there were. But, you know, Charlie was the first African-American player. In fact, the second African-American student to ever come to Davidson. So when he signed with me, I mean, you know, he came to all of our games and so forth. And when Mike Malloy came down for a visit, Charlie entertained him for the weekend. And they were all set up to be roommates at Davidson. And you know, so as soon as Charlie signed with me, then everybody else started recruiting. Wake Forest and North Carolina and Duke, all of them started recruiting him. And that's what he means by that you know, I got his name out there because nobody knew who Charlie was until I signed him.
How did you find him?
I think
him?
That's what he means.
How did you find him? Where did he pop up? Because as you mentioned,
I'll tell you how I found him. What was the guy that coached at Lenoir, Ryan Wells? Was it Wells? My memory.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, too.
Billy Wells and Tommy Wells or something. He was a coach at Lenoir, Ryan. And I knew him. He was a good friend of mine. I can't think of his name right now. I'm sorry. But anyway, he called me one day. He said, hey, Lefty, there's an African-American kid playing at Laurinburg Institute. We played him last night. He said, he is the truth. He said, you ought to start recruiting him. and that's what I when I did. But he was a, and I the first time I saw Charlie play was at Hillside High School, where John Lucas's dad was the principal, and I mean, he was something else as a high school player. He's great. But Tommy Wells, I think, is the coach at Lenoir Ryan, was the first one that told me about him.
Well, Coach, you saw him play, and you said, I'd like to have him on my team. But take yourself back to those days of the mid-1960s, and as you pointed out, there were not no – there. If it was an African-American player, it was a rarity, and at Davidson – Davidson was hardly desegregated. And why did you think?
Yeah, that's true.
What was going through your mind, and who did you have to touch base with, and how did the town react to this in the middle of a segregated college in a segregated town? And you grew up in that environment as well. But what made you think, okay, I can bring African American player onto my team and people are going to accept it?
Well, at the time, it was legal to recruit or for black African-American students to come to Davidson. And I had always thought it was ridiculous. I mean, I used to ride in the back of the streetcar in Norfolk, Virginia, where the African-Americans sat, because I thought it was stupid that they had to sit back there. In fact, it used to be, when I was growing up, if the streetcar was filled up, and a white guy got on, a black lady had to give, or an African-American lady had to get up and give him her seat. So I used to be just the opposite. If it was filled up and an African-American lady got on, I got up and gave her my seat. Because mm-hmm. I thought it was the stupidest rule or whatever it was, tradition, in Norfolk, Virginia. So in fact, some of my best friends in, when I was going to high school, it was an African-American community right across from where I live, and I used to hang out over there with some of the guys.
Yeah, but Coach.
So, I mean, I had no – in fact, I tried to get a what's that Indian community in
Pembroke,
North Carolina?
Pembroke.
What is it?
UNC Pembroke.
Pembroke, yeah. I had an Indian kid visit before African Americans could come to to Davidson, and everybody said, "Well, Lefty's got an African American. I mean, they can't come here." I said, "Look, he's Indian."
Well, but Coach,
so out of the town. As a matter of fact, your daddy was a great guy, and you know I love him. He hired me when Charlie Scott decided to come to Davidson. See, the song at Davidson used was Dixie. Are you from Dixie? That was their fight song.
Right.
And so somebody said, you know, I got to thinking that we can't be singing that with Charlie coming here. And so I went to your dad and I said, let's knock that off. Get another sign, a song. I don't know what they're doing now. I said, that's going to be embarrassing to Charlie. And so he did. He changed the song.
Well,
so Charlie had a pretty good effect on Davidson, really. And I, you know, he used to work my camp, and he and I have been friends for a long time. He calls me all the time.
I want to forgive me. I'm just so interested in that transformative time of the that you're talking about. The time you were recruiting Charlie Scott was a time of change in the South, where
right.
more and more people. You know, you look at when I was there playing for you, we played the University of Alabama, and as you remember, beat them twice. Maybe you don't
right.
remember, but I do remember it. And that was kind of a big thing for us to beat Alabama. They were a great football powerhouse. Didn't have a bad basketball team then, but there wasn't an African American in sight in the stands or on the bench or anything. It was an all-white game. That was in 1961, I guess, 62.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, within 3 or 4 years, you're out there recruiting black players. And it just – it's what happened during that time that opened that door? And I would just say that.
Why? Because I told you, it's like John Lucas's dad, Mr. Lucas. He doesn't call people black or African. He calls them good sunburned people.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew, for me, growing up in Norfolk, which is sort of in the South, you know, I never looked at them as being a different color. They were my friends. And then when they said they could come to Davidson, you know, it was okay to come to Davidson and Coach Wells, I'm pretty sure that was his name.
He
I hope I'm not calling him wrong. Told me about Charlie that I went to see him play, and it wasn't down my mind I was going to recruit him. But nobody else was recruiting him, see, until I signed him. I should have kept it a secret.
Well, this
because
is...
when I put it in the Charlotte Observer that I had signed Charlie Scott, African-American, you know, then everybody starts looking at him because they knew I knew how to recruit.
Well, we'll talk some more about this. If you join us late, I'm visiting with basketball coach Lefty Drizel. He's just been been selected to join the Hall of Fame in just a few months. Coach Drizel, I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Drizel. Coach Drizel has recently been elected to the Hall of Fame. He'll be inducted in a few months. Coach Drizel, we were talking before the break. Charlie Scott, who's also joining the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame this fall, says that without Lefty Drizel, there would have never been a Charlie Scott. And I thought that was an incredible tribute coming from somebody who, you know, who folks at Davidson had been disappointed with and continue to be. They continue to talk about it 50 years later.
Charlie's a great friend of mine and always has been, even though he didn't come. See, I feel like I kind of raised him a little bit. Because he was a Davidson signee for about 6 months or so. And in fact, he applied early. See, he was valedictorian of his class at Laurinburg and outstanding student. And so he applied early admission to Davidson and was accepted and put down a $100 deposit. So he was a Davidson student for a while. Not a student, but whatever.
Well, back in those days, what happened in the South was that one or two African-American players would come on the team and often be the sparks of the team. That, in my mind, many of them were just really good people. You know, in addition to being good basketball players, they were wonderful people.
Well, let me tell you something. Mike Malloy had 1,300 on the SAT. Back then, I had a kid at Davidson had to have 1,000. Well, he had 1,300. He was smart. So, I mean, just because the kid was African American didn't mean he couldn't be a good student.
Well, no, I mean, they proved that. But the thing is that they kind of pushed some of us who've been brought up in the culturally segregated. These guys came in, and in addition to being star basketball players, many of them were also just wonderful people, and it kind of helped move the desegregation effort, the civil rights movement. That was kind of another side of it, that there were these people who were grabbing us by the hand and saying, "Hey, we're not, you know, don't worry about it. We're okay too." And that the
right,
if it hadn't,
right.
that the athletics. And these black players who came in and were stars brought a lot of, segregationists around to a new way of thinking about it. I think about that all the time, but that was just part of your life. You were trying to get good basketball players to play for you.
Right.
What happened right. when it came that so that you'd see one or two black basketball players on college teams? Now you look at it and it's mostly a spotting of white kids, surrounded primarily. Are black players are black players just naturally better, or is it they're growing up and their attention? How do you explain the fact that so many?
Well, a lot of them grew up with poor parents, and grandparents, so they didn't have any money. So, like right now, the white kids, they play video games and go to the beach and stuff like that. And I think the black players just work harder. These guys nowadays, because you shoot with your left hand very much.
I was left-handed. With
your right hand then.
I wasn't much good shooting with either hand, but I was terrible on the right side going in for a left.
I know. I couldn't shoot much with my right, but nobody could stop me going left, so I didn't have to. But anyway, the way these kids today, can shoot with left hand, right hand, three-point shots from 30 feet out, they just practiced more. You can't tell me that Curry and LeBron James and those great players, they're not different from anybody else. They've just practiced more. And Charlie Scott the same way, it's just that they practice more because their parents didn't have the money to send them to, regular camps or, whatever.
Yeah, I think that explains a lot of it too. I represented when I was practicing law. I represented a wonderful guy who was the editor of the Charlotte Post, the black newspaper in Charlotte, and he had written sports. He had written about black sports for the white newspapers growing up, and finally got together enough money to buy the newspaper. So I represented him, and we spent a lot of time together. And so I raised the same question with him and said, look, aren't blacks just naturally better basketball players than whites? And he got he was gentle and with me, but he got his dander up and he said, look, DJ, he said, it's not race. It's black kids have to work. A lot of black kids have to really work hard to get anywhere. And if they spend a lot more time on the basketball court. It's not race. It's just, he said exactly what you said. That's growing up and having to work harder. I don't know. It's an interesting kind of thing, but it's an interesting dynamic that if you go to the University of Alabama like we did today and play in Alabama, the center of the South, the center of the Confederacy, the basketball team's probably going to be all black. Might be one white kid playing basketball for them today.
Well, for the fact, one of the top players in the draft this year was from Alabama. I forget his name, but
well, Coach, the other thing that I think folks would be interested in your view about talking about the draft and about the what's going on in professional basketball. Are you a fan? Are you a fan of professional basketball? Do you like to watch it?
I watch it, but I'm not a. I'm amazed at some of the things that these kids can do. Like LeBron James is a 6'8" point guard, really. and that would never happen when I played. If you were 6'8", you were a postman. And even I never had any guards that were as big as he was or he is. And so I love watching. I love watching Curry. Curry amazes me because a lot of people that don't follow him, see, when I watch Curry play, I just watch him. I don't watch the other.
Oh, really?
The other nine players or eight players.
What is it about that?
I watch him on offense, defense, when he's dribbling the ball. And the kid is amazing, and not just because he went to Davidson, but he's a heck of a passer. He can rebound. He gets a lot of rebounds. And he's a little guy, but he's amazing. And you know that he has worked at his game because of Dale, his daddy. And that's why he can do all those things. All those drills that you see him do before game, Pete Maravich did those when he worked in my camp with Charlie Scott. But most kids You know, it doesn't matter whether they're African American or white. They don't spend that much time dribbling the basketball or passing it or whatever. I used to see Pete Maravich standing. You remember at the end of Johnson Gym, we had a big cement wall, and he was standing about 5 feet away and thought behind his back, left-handed and right-handed. He could work his way back to half court and throw the ball. And he had a spot on the wall, and he could throw it and make it hit that spot from half court with his left hand and his right hand behind his back. And that's what Curry does, all that stuff now. Plus, he's a great shooter, too.
Well, Maravich had the benefit of having a basketball father like Stephen Curry did.
You had
children, too. Did you make them do that kind of stuff growing up? And did you train Chuck?
No, I just had one boy.
Well, what do you have? Girls play basketball, too.
Not back then, they didn't. None of my girls played basketball. And in fact, there were girls' basketball, even when I first went to Maryland. You know, girls didn't even give scholarships in basketball.
Well, what about, did you do all that stuff with your son, Chuck? I mean, he was a good basketball player.
Yeah, well, he was a pretty good player. I mean, you know, he was a good high school player and played in the Capital Classic, but... No, you got to be dedicated. Chuck was interested in a lot of other things, I guess. But, I mean, he worked hard at the game, but he didn't work as hard as Curry or Maravich or any of those guys.
If you join us late, I'm visiting with basketball coach Lefty Driesell, headed for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My coach is Coach Lefty Driesell. If you did join us late, Coach Driesell coached at four different schools, including Davidson, Maryland, James Madison, Georgia State. Took all his teams to the NCAA tournament. Won 100 games at each of those schools. I believe, Coach, that nobody else has done that.
I don't know. Maybe Cliff Ellis, I think, has done it now. Cliff Ellis won 100 games. I don't know if he took them all to the NCAA. But.
Well, it's an amazing record, and we're doing this broadcast, Coach, to celebrate that recognition and achievement. And earlier, for people in Chapel Hill would be interested, if they don't know that Charlie Scott is also going to join Coach Driesell in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Charlie Scott said, Coach, and we won't talk about this anymore, but just for people who joined us late, what Charlie Scott said is when he found out that he was going to be in the Hall of Fame with Lefty Driesell, he said, if it weren't for Lefty Driesell, there wouldn't be a Charlie Scott. And those of you who missed Coach Driesell's and my conversation about it, you can pick that up on chapelborough.com. Coach, we've been talking a little bit about the pro game, and I gathered from your attitude that you like to watch the individual players like Stephen Curry in the Pro Hall of Fame, but there is one pro player who some people say is the greatest player ever, and that's sort of heresy here in Chapel Hill, because folks here would say that Michael Jordan is the greatest player ever. And he was pretty good, but is James better than is he the all time best player in your mind?
Well, you know, of course, I coached against Michael Jordan for 4 years. He was a great, great player, but physically, you know, LeBron James is so much bigger and stronger, and I don't know. Michael Jordan was a great leaper, but I think if they had a jumping contest, I think LeBron James might win. And LeBron James might be a better passer, than Jordan. I don't know if he's a better. Jordan was a great, great shooter and a great passer too. But some of the passes that LeBron James throws are unbelievable. And You know, he is a better rebounder than Michael. I don't know. If I had to pick between the two, I'd like to have both of them. It's hard for me to say one's better than the other, but they're both great, great players. And, you know, it's hard to say which one's the best.
Well, speaking of having both of them on the same team, there's some controversy, and I don't know whether you are watching this or have a comment about it, about loading up some of the great teams with more great players and leaving other teams behind competitively. Is like with LeBron James going to Los Angeles, they're picking up other stars, and then in San Francisco, instead of just resting on their laurels, they're trying to pick up other stars. And does that? I mean, if you were the coach, you'd be doing the same thing, wouldn't you? You'd be trying to get as many good players.
Yeah, as I would. I mean, you know, I don't blame them, but and I don't blame the players either. So in some ways, you know, I think the players ought to stay where they are. Just like in college, I don't like this idea that a senior, if he graduates, can transfer and not sit out. I don't like that because, I mean, if Mike Malloy or, you know, Dick Snyder or some of them were to, graduate and transfer, I'd have really been upset. So, I think it's in the pros, it's a business and you're trying to make money, so I guess it's okay to go ahead and get more money and go somewhere else.
Well, you said earlier that you didn't say you weren't interested in the pro game, but you said when you watched it, you watched the individual players rather than cheering for any particular team. What about in?
Well, I do watch the offenses, and see, I don't like the offense that most pros play now. There's very few big men that can score with their back to the basket. All the big men, they want to pull outside and shoot threes. And they always, most of the time, you watch, there'll be some pro summer games on tonight, I'll watch them. But they don't even have anybody in the post. Most of the time, it's two guys in the corner, two guys on the wing, and then a point guard. And some, you know, somebody will flash it into the post. I mean, they'll just clear out the side for LeBron, and he'll just back you down in there. But he doesn't start out in the post, so the game has changed. Most of my coaching career, the only way you could get 3 points was if a postman got a layup and got fouled, then he got 3 points because you never fouled a shooter that shot outside. So that's one reason I ran a double post offense, because that's the way we could score 3 points. You couldn't score it. Nobody ever fouled a jump shooter. And so the game has changed. I don't particularly like, you know, for example, I don't think there was but maybe one or two NBA teams this year that didn't average 100 points a game. Well, if you're going to average 100 points a game, somebody not playing defense somewhere. I mean, they can't guard anybody. Of course, they're more skilled offensively, the players are. But I like to watch players that play defense and, get the ball inside the postmen. And there's not too many, postmen in the NBA that score a lot of points. Well, some of them do, but very few.
Well, you pointed out that LeBron James, who is, built to be a postman, plays guard. I mean, he can do anything.
He brings the ball up the court. Now, he'll post you up sometime, and he just brings the ball up the court and takes it to the hole, and nobody messes about getting in front of him.
What about all of these guys can dunk it now? I mean, and all of them are tall. Is the goal, isn't it time to move the goal up a little bit, maybe 6 inches or a foot?
I don't know. You have to move it up to about 14 feet. So I guess, no. But, John Wooden always hated people that dunked. He was against the dunking, which he couldn't do because of Kareem for a while. But now, you know, he got five guys that can dunk because they work with the weights and they condition so much and they watch the diets. And, you know, being a basketball player today, you got to really be in shape. I'm talking about, you know, they lift and waist to be able to jump higher, to be stronger, be better rebounders. And they have the guys that make a lot of money have dietitians that, you know, make sure they're eating right and hopefully getting in a rest. And so to be a basketball player in the NBA, you got to be a great athlete.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell. Coach Driesell has just been elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Coach Lefty Driesell, recently elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Congratulations again, Coach. A lot of your friends here.
Well, thank you. When I started coaching in 1955 as a JV coach, I never thought I'd be in the Naismith Hall of Fame, so it's just a great honor and something I'm very, very proud of.
Well, those of us...
And I'm proud of... See, I've said this when they told me I was going to get in, that it's not just for me, because I never got a rebound. I never got... As a player, I'm not getting in. I'm getting in as a coach. With a coach, you're just as good as your players. So really, it's an honor for my players more than it is for me. And so I had great players at Davidson, you know, and they want me to speak for 5 minutes in January at the introduction, at the when you get introduced or whatever it is. But, you know, I would like to say all the great players that I had at Davidson and Maryland and JMU and Georgia State, but I couldn't do that in 5 minutes, so I'm trying to. They want me to give them a speech that I'm going to give in 5 minutes, and I'm having a hard time deciding what to say because if I start naming names,
yeah,
and I leave a guy, somebody out there was a really good player, you know, you can't have a final top 10 team without good substitutes, you know. If I got 12, 14 guys at Davidson, I only had 11. But all 11 of those guys were very important to me in winning, just as much as Dick Snyder, Mike Malloy, and Fred Hensel, and all the other ones, and yourself. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to say. I still haven't made up my mind.
Well, I'll be interested, Coach, to see what you know, with your 5 minutes allotted. And, of course, as you mentioned, if you start mentioning the names, you've had so many great players, many of whom probably are under, you know, underappreciated that you'd like to mention. But all of us would say, well, why didn't he mention me?
And I know. That's what I'm saying. And so I can't say, you know, everybody's name. And if I just say the All-Americans' names, well, they were good. But it's just like I'm a little ticked off at Davidson, since you're from Davidson. Because when I was there, I put up a banner for every year were in the top 10. You remember that?
Yeah. No, Coach, just don't get started on that. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know what I said. Because it honors the players, not me. And just like the Hall of Fame honors the players, not me. You see what I'm saying?
Well, Coach, we're working on that. But it is, it's an interesting kind of thing. And I follow, of course, Davidson and Carolina mostly, but there's been no – but I watch when a new coach comes in to any school.
Right.
And not just any coach, but many coaches, they want to be the center of it, and that the worship of the old coaches isn't a part of it. Now, the smart coaches, and you'll see this at Carolina in their museum, they of course, go back to Coach Smith, but they also go back to Frank McGuire, and they even go back to Coach Tom Scott. You know, I mean, it's It's a litany of tradition rather than just the coach who's there now. So
right.
Anyway,
well, I tell you something. Carolina does the best job of all the universities I know, better than Duke or UCLA or any of them, because they honor a lot of people. You know, see, I get on them at Maryland because they don't have up Adrian Branch or, you know, Brad Davis, who is he's in the NBA Hall of Fame. Because I don't know why, but they don't. But, you know, at Carolina, they put anybody that was a good player, they put a banner up for them, which I think is smart. And then that thing that they play in timeouts about Michael Jordan says, I got Carolina fever. Well, Maryland's doing one of those this year because I just made a tape.
Oh, is that right?
They kind of copying Carolina, which I think North Carolina does a great job of, you know, giving credit to all of their players and coaches and so forth.
Well, Coach, you're just about out of time, but I've got on my list of things. One is that I get to see Lenny Rosenblum from time to time, one of the great heroes who is continued to be, lives here, but it continued to be recognized as a part of that Carolina tradition. And he says, he says the nicest things about you. He said he and his wife are big Lefty Driesell fans, and I don't know where that.
Well, that's because I say a lot of good things about him. Listen, a lot of North Carolina fans do not realize this. Frank McGuire coached the only undefeated team in Carolina's great basketball tradition, and Lenny Rosenbluth was the star. I mean, he wasn't good; he was great. And in fact, you see, he was a freshman at North Carolina when I was a senior at Duke. So I started hearing about him in 54. And they said, oh, man, we got this guy over at North Carolina, Lenny Rosenbluth. He's averaging 30 points a game on a freshman team. You know, so I've heard about him a long time, and he was a great player.
Well, he's a great person and great for us to have around as well. Now, Coach, you went to Duke, and you've given Coach Krzyzewski some credit for helping your cause in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he did. He certainly did.
But what do you think about this one-and-done game that he's got going on and other coaches? Is that good for basketball?
Well, I think they're going to change the rule. Yeah, I mean, look, when I was recruiting, I recruited the best players in the country that I could get, right? Well, you can't turn down a great player that wants to come to Duke, you know, or North Carolina. Roy's not turning down any great players that he thinks will go one. You know, I think it's a stupid rule. I have said it for many, many years. I coached Moses Malone, who was the first one to go from high school to the NBA or to an ABA. He went. But he was the first guy to go straight from high school to the pros. And look, you know, LeBron James did it, Kobe Bryant did it. I think it's ridiculous to make a kid go to college for a year if he doesn't want to go. If he wants to go, good, great. But if you were my son and you could get $4 million, $10 million to go and not go to college, listen, when Moses Malone went pro, I made him put, because I loved Moses and I wanted him to get an education. In his contract, you can look it up, he got $20,000 for every credit, or might have been 10, I don't know what it was, a lot of money, for every credit he passed, college credit he passed. And he did go to summer school about one summer. But then after that, he was making so much money, he didn't need to go to college.
We got no money at all. But I mean, going back to Moses Malone, would he have had a better life had he had it year two, three, or even graduated from college, so that he'd have a life after he got out of professional basketball? Or if
no, Moses Malone never drank a bit of liquor, never smoked marijuana, never. He was a strong Christian guy, and I tell you what, he was playing basketball about the year when he passed out. In fact, I was to go to dinner with him he was at the Naismith Hall of Fame, and he came back to Norfolk to play in a golf tournament. And every year he did that, he and I went out to dinner. And I had a date to go out to dinner with him, with one of his best friends from Petersburg, that night. And his friend went to the motel to pick him up, to come pick me up. We were going to go to dinner. And so it was about 7 o'clock that morning. He called me and he said, "Coach, I got some bad news." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Moses is in the motel room dead."
Oh, my God.
So he died right in Virginia Beach, and I was going to go to dinner with him that night.
Well, I hate to end the program on that sad note, except that it emphasizes that even with players like Charlie Scott or Moses Malone, who you recruited and loved, when they didn't come sign up for you, you stuck with them. And, Coach, you stuck with me. You stuck with so many of your players. I want to thank you, and congratulations on the Hall of Fame. It's a great
– Well, thank you, DJ, and good congratulations to you to be a great guy, great administrator, you know.
Thanks, Coach.
And a politician.
Yeah, there you go. Our guest has been Coach Lefty Driscoll. Thanks, Tim, and to you for listening. This is DJ Martin who's talking. I'll be back before you know it.